Is this the phone here? Hey, Jeff.
Hey, man. How are you?
John here. John Carney.
Hello, John. Nice to hear your voice again. This is Jeffrey Wells.
For you as well. How are you?
Quite well. Quite well. I know that you're out here, weren't you, about a month ago, roughly?
I was out here. I was in New York and L.A. for about a week each. Yeah, it was great. We had a great time.
And I had heard from a friend, this was at, I believe, the agency screening that they had of Once.
Oh, yeah, that's your man. What's his name in L.A.? It was a good screening, actually. It was really enjoyable.
And the person that I spoke to who was there said that you had said something about being interested, obviously depending upon commercial reception to Once, of possibly doing a Glenn and Marquetta Part 2 film, a sequel.
A sequel. Well, I mean, that began as a kind of a joke, but now it's beginning to... I mean, the idea would be precedent, or would be based on, I mean, and it would be completely necessary that Once, that the film we're talking about now, became, I guess, a small hit, because there's no point making a sequel of a film if nobody wanted to see the first one. It's kind of meaningless. Yeah. So it would depend greatly on the success of Once. But I love the way Linklater did Before Sunset. I think that was a very brilliant sequel to that first film. And was a really interesting challenge and brilliantly pulled off and really timed really very well, I think, in the characters' lives. So, I mean, if Once itself is a moderate success and people are interested in the music and the characters, I would certainly be very interested in coming back in like 7 or 8 years' time and deciding or seeing where the characters might be and what songs they'd have to sing and what they'd have to say for themselves and to make a sequel.
The note that I just got is 7 or 8 years. My feeling would be I would want to know exactly what happened next year. I wouldn't want to wait 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, but then it becomes like The Sopranos, like you're doing one each year. So I mean, what I thought was great about Before Sunset was just, you know, that he was married and he had a couple of kids and, it was just really good timing. It was such an unusual... I mean, I had it with this TV show that I did a TV show in Ireland called Bachelor's Walk, and I did 3 series of it, and then, like, we basically spent about half a year of our life wrapping up this series because we wanted to end it.
Right.
And we spent ages, myself and the two other writers, breaking our bollocks trying to end this series, elegantly finish it, get it done so it's closed and it's finished.
Yeah.
And we finished it and went on air, and the broadcast, and we were so happy to be done of it, and the broadcasters rang us up and said, what about a Christmas special this year?
Right.
And I was like, God, we just spent the last year finishing this story. Like, let's wait 4 or 5 years before we make a Christmas special. And it took a while before they actually realized, actually, you're right, you know, people aren't going to be interested in that now. They'll be interested in 4 years' time.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to think the same thing extends to Once, that maybe, you know, if the film does well now, that in, you know, 5 or 6 years, people would be like, oh, yeah, that film with the song, I'd go and see a sequel. As long as the songs were good, I'd go and see a sequel of that story or those characters.
Right. Now, it's funny, we were talking when I first...
The room here, just to let you know, so we're all, the three of us are around the phone.
Oh, hello, Glenn and Marquetta. This is Jeffrey speaking from Los Angeles.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Marquetta. I happened to just drop in and look, see half of it at the San Francisco Film Festival. It was showing in 2 different theaters, and you could feel the atmosphere, the emotional aroma after the film was over, and you could just sense that a lot of people were making sure that they wrote down their feelings about the film on the ballots and giving it back. You know, you can just sense that when people are feel strongly about it. So
amazing. So strange. I know it's I mean, I don't know where it's from. I mean, I like to think it's kind of just sound self-flattering, or that in doing the TV show, I was, you know, when you make a TV show, you've aired 3 episodes of it, and you're editing the last 3. So, you know, you're out in the streets and you're meeting people. My girlfriend was also the lead in this show, so she would get people coming up to her saying, Jesus, you know, how's it going to end? Are you going to, you know, what's going to happen? Are you going to get with Raymond and you're going to be happily ever after? And she would say, well, you'd have to see. And I'd be with her because we were dating and stuff, and I'd be writing the,
right.
We'd be shooting the final episode. So we kind of got a great sense of, I guess, what audiences expect of characters and what audiences kind of want or need from a project, whether it be a TV or be a film. And you can kind of, once you know that, you can kind of play with it in a way. You kind of, you don't cheat them of what they want, but you don't give them exactly what they want in another way. And I think that I hope, I like to think, I mean, again, I say it's flattering in a way that what Worms does well, I think, is kind of, is defy kind of surprise your expectations in a way of a film.
Sure. You know, I was thinking about analogies. You were talking about how in the very first encounter in which I listened to you guys talk about it at Sundance, you talked about how it's very much of a movie musical in the tradition of Brigadoon and straight ahead 1950s musicals. And I countered and said, "Well, I don't think so. I think it's more of a completely self-invented new style musical in the vein of Cabaret or A Hard Day's Night." Or Dancer in the Dark, it's got something extra going on. And then we kind of bounce that back and forth. But I something that was really big that I didn't think of as a precedent or an analogy, which is a Brief Encounter. This is the Brief Encounter of the 21st century. This, because there's no, you know, it's all about spirit, it's all about the eyes, it's all about the heart, and there's no sexuality, really.
Right, the David Lean film.
Yeah.
They never come together in that, isn't it? It's like a what if we did have an affair and he comes back and the husband says to her, you've been a terrible way away, thank you for coming back to me.
That's true,
I haven't seen that film in years.
It's been a long time, but it's a very touching, moving film because it's all about what, you know, what could happen, what might happen, what is clearly in the cards to happen, but it doesn't happen.
If you want to write about this film as being the Brief Encounter of the 21st century, I'd be very happy.
That's exactly the thought I had in mind. I was wondering, Glenn or Makarte, have you ever seen Brief Encounter, just to continue this thought for a second?
I don't know the film, to be honest.
Me neither.
No, that's a no on both counts? Okay.
Great.
Well, it's beautiful. It's a very nice little film. It was made in 1947 or something. I think it's on.
But yeah, nice.
So, Glenn, why aren't the frames coming with you guys? And why don't you do some songs with the frames as well as your duets with Marquetta? Why don't you do that? I mean, I would be fascinated to hear the frames perform as part of this overall tour you're doing.
Well, John won't let me. We've just finished a tour. We finished a couple of days ago on Coachella out in LA, and the Frames tour was brilliant. I mean, I really enjoyed it. But
I wish I'd known about that. I didn't even know about the Frames being out here. I'm sorry, I missed it entirely.
Yeah, I know, it's fine. But we just finished the tour, and we're coming back out in September. It's kind of, I guess it's just a separate thing. I kind of guess, you know, the film or this thing is kind of just separate to the Frames. And I'd love to sort of join the dots between the two, because it would be great for my band if this film does well. I'd be very, very happy.
Right.
But at the same time, I'm kind of relaxed about it, and whatever will happen, you know.
Okay, all right. So I was also talking to someone about how marvelously well condensed this film is. It doesn't feel truncated. It feels like a very natural flow to it. But it's amazing, really. This is one of the shorter, really good films that I've seen in many a moon. I mean, 85 minutes is very tight, but it doesn't feel. I'm just wondering, John. Did you have something? Somewhat longer at some point before we saw it at Sundance. What was the first cut like for you? How long was it?
The first cut, there would have been a few extraneous bits and pieces, like in any kind of assembly of a film. I think there were, story-wise, I think it was pretty much what you're seeing, but I think there were a few kind of slightly more long-winded transitions, and I really cut back any of the kind of fat of the film, really just kind of quite brutally from scene to scene, just to try and kind of move it along at a fast pace and keep the film as short as possible. You know, because I guess a film is really, for me, it's just an hour and a half of time, and, you know, it's very important that the people in the audience spend that time comfortably and don't get restless and walk out of the cinema feeling that they had just, you know, it's like going away from a good meal, you know, you had just enough, you didn't eat too much, and, you know, you feel a little bit drunk, but you're not too drunk, and so in a way a film is like that to me, so it was very important to make sure that the timing was right, and that it was, it was really like a gig.
Yeah.
The gig goes on too long, it's a pain in the ass, and if it's too short, you don't even, you know, so it's kind of like that for me.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, you were telling me, I think it was in Park City also, about how what I called your Bertolucci shot at the very end, which I think is a beautiful grace note. It's I'm so glad that you were able to scrape the money together to afford that. Were there Was that something you had in mind from the get-go? Did you have that planned, boarded out, or can you tell me the evolution of that shot? Because it's a beautifully handled shot. I think it stands right up there with all, with any Bertolucci shot that I've ever...
That's fantastic. That's very, very flattering. But, yeah, I mean, that was... I had always the idea of a little epilogue of, for the film in which the camera cranes down through the trees and you see the piano arriving and she plays the piano and we kind of just track back from the house across and see Dublin. You know, that was my statement, I guess. It's the only shot that is a statement, I guess, in the film. The rest of it is very kind of cinema verite, very documentary-ish, and it's, you know, it's long lenses and it's very kind of free-form. That's the only choreographed kind of moment is the last shot, and I think that's another reason why it works well, is because you kind of go, oh, wow, this guy can kind of deliver a shot when he needs to, and you know what I mean?
Precisely, yes.
That's right, yeah. So, no, I mean, I always knew, and I kind of could hear that kind of moment in my head when the camera craned out that window and came back, and we just got this amazing sunny day. Everything just seemed to kind of bless us at the right time, and Mara looked great at that window, and the sun just came out, and we had the crane, and I think we got it in like 3 or 4 takes. We were done with that scene, with that shot.
Wow.
It was great. I'm really glad you like it.
Yeah, it's a real beauty. Now, what people usually do when they're on the promotional tour, fellas, is the distributor usually has them sit down and do the DVD commentary. Have you guys done that for the DVD?
Not yet, but I think we'd love to, actually. I think it would be great fun to just sit back and watch the film and remember certain paths. I think we'd have a lot to talk about as well, you know, and a lot to kind of remember from it.
It's probably better to do it sooner rather than later before you get sick of watching it.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Marquetta and Glenn, how many times have you guys seen it now?
What?
How many times have you seen Once? How many times have you sat through the film? How well do you know it? How?
Maybe five, maybe seven or eight times.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that many, actually. It's just one of those things where you just kind of want to, you know, stay out of the...
Yeah.
You know, just kind of stay out of the way and just enjoy it for what it is, you know.
Of course.
But I have to say, I really, really like it. You know, it's kind of one of those, it's a really good thing to be able to say about it.
Now, who was the one who had the relationship with those great street musicians that you cut the album with? Did you know them, Glenn, or who knew those guys to begin with?
Well, they were just a bunch of people we kind of made up. We kind of made up this idea. Like, there's a Phil Lynott statue in Dublin, and it's only been there a couple of years. And Phil Lynott was a singer of Tin Lizzy, and he was like a huge kind of character in Ireland. And so we kind of thought, wouldn't it be great to have this band who are like basically huge fans of Thin Lizzy, and they both add his statue, and they only play his songs, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so, and we just basically comprised them out of people we knew, just friends. They're not, you know, they're musicians, but not people we play with.
I love that drummer. I mean, when he kicks in on the first big song that you guys do, he's really a good drummer. I really like him.
Yeah, he is. He's very good. He did a great job. He's like, what was he, 16?
Yeah, he's 15 or something like that, yeah.
And that line when he says he doesn't really know anything about recording, there's something about the naivete that I just really love the way he says that line to the to Eamon, who asked him.
Right, yeah.
I don't know if you've noticed, but if you watch the film, he keeps on looking into the camera.
No, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, he just keeps on looking into the screen. It's very, very strange.
I love another big favorite scene of mine is Marquette's solo when she comes out of the store with the batteries and sings the song going, and it looks like just she's basically walking almost around one huge block. Can you tell me how many times that you had to get that to get it right? Because I just love the naturalness of it and the way it doesn't feel overly cinematized. It just feels, you know, like it's like someone just happened to be tagging along with her as she's singing.
Yeah, we tried it about 4 or 5 times and we were done. I mean, John wanted to get it like how do you say, just one shot? The whole
one take.
Yeah, one take, that's the word. Well, you don't basically cut in between. And it didn't turn out that way in the end, but, you know, it still feels like that to me at least. There were people walking along, like beside me on the next, across the road, carrying a radio that played the song. And for me, personally, it was really enjoyable. It was the closest to like a video that you shoot for a song.
So I was going to ask whether you had some sort of earphone thing so you could hear it, but it was that's great that someone was playing it.
We just carried around a transistor radio. We were so low budget, actually. We literally carried around a tape recorder with a little speaker on our shoulder.
Right.
Somebody just mentioned, said a really nice thing about that scene, actually.
Yeah.
The screening we just had here. she never leaves the flat.
Huh, yeah.
It's a really nice way of looking at it, actually, and I never thought of it, but because it's the only scene that takes a license in the film mm-hmm. and goes off and becomes a little bit kind of surreal, or, you know, the one that you have to suspend your disbelief to get into.
Yeah.
I like that it's open to interpretation, but that's, this woman was the first person that came along and interpreted it so wildly differently than right. than we had, which is lovely, the idea that she just kind of, she's in this room with this child
right.
and this music and the batteries go dead, and she imagines this scene where she goes out and she just has this kind of haunting moment in the street in her room, but it actually never really happened. I thought that was lovely.
Now, let's just review briefly. You came in yesterday to New York, right? The three of you?
Yeah.
And you had a big screening somewhere last night, you're saying?
No, we were in Boston last night.
Boston last
night. Oh, yeah, we came into New York last night. I had a little gig last night, and then we just had dinner, and then we've got a screening tonight.
Okay. Where is it going to be? Because I'm going to put this up in a couple of hours.
Where is it? I'll tell you now.
It's not part of the Tribeca Film Festival, is it?
Oh, it's not. It's in the NYU Cantor Film Center. It's on 36 East and 8.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you guys are doing a series of screenings across the country in which you're going to show the film and then do a little talk and maybe play some music after each one, like you did at Sundance, right?
We're in a big tour bus, like a kind of a vaudeville traveling act from the 1920s or like a baseball team. We're traveling around in this van with ones written up the side of it and pictures of Glenn and Marr. And we're inside watching DVDs and reading books, and we arrive in 15 different cities over the next 18 days and do exactly as you said, you know, play the film, do a Q&A, and then play a couple of songs and
yeah.
go for a few drinks with whoever wants to join us.
Well, this is great about the van. Is this something that Fox Searchlight is renting for you, or...?
Yeah, basically, I have a fear of flying, so I just came up with this idea of a van, and they thought it was a great idea, so they put together this really nice bus, and so we're all on that.
I don't know if you guys have any digital cameras or cell phone cameras, but if you guys could send me a photo of that van anytime, I would love to run it just to show people.
What's your email address?
Groover1, G-R-U, V as in Victor, E-R, and then number 1 at earthlink.net.
Right.
Because that sounds fantastic. I'd love to get a shot of that if I could.
It's funny. It's very funny. So G-R-O-U-V-E-R.
G-R-U as in uncle,
yeah.
V as in Victor, E-R, and then number 1.
Perfect. That's great. Yeah, I've got that. I'll attach an email to you when I get some wireless, and I'll send you some funny pictures of it.
That would be really, really brilliant. I'd love that.
No worries.
All right, well, this has been great, guys. I wish I were in sync with you. I happen to be going to New York on Thursday, and I won't be here for your visit to Los Angeles, which I believe is, what, on the 17th or 16th?
The 17th, I think, yeah. 15th, yeah.
And there's a small gathering of press people and whatnot.
Exactly, yeah. Oh, that's a shame you won't be there.
I'm sorry, but I'm going to be off at the Cannes Film Festival. In fact, your producer and I are going to hook up sometime in the first couple of days.
Oh, watch him. David Collins or Martina Nyland?
David.
Oh.
He's going to be in Cannes, he said, on Wednesday, and we're going to hook up for a drink sometime in the first couple of days.
He's great. Yeah, you like David. He's a character. He's a very nice guy.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Have you met him before?
Well, yeah, at Sundance. We had this whole sit-down at the press room at the Marriott Hotel, and we were...
That's right, yeah. Of course, he was there as well, wasn't he, then?
And
yeah.
then that night when we all went to the River Horse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he was there as well. I forgot that he was there.
Yeah. Well, lovely to speak with you guys. I wish you the best. Obviously, I know that this movie is going to... is going to catch. It's just a matter of getting people to come to a movie that doesn't have big movie stars. That's the whole thing. That's really it. Once the word gets out, it can't miss. It can't miss.
Well, that's great faith in it. I hope so as well. It would be amazing to, because we began the film as such a small little project. It's just been such a gas for the last few months.
Yeah. Well, lovely to talk to all three of you.
You too. Absolutely
you.
Great. Good to talk to you again.
Thanks, Jeff.
And best of luck, and I really can't wait to see the picture of that van. So
I'll email it through to you, and you'll have my email on file then.
Great.
Brilliant. Excellent, man.
Be well.
Good to talk to you.
See you.
See you soon.
Yep.